this bolt of lightning shot across the universe and inspired me with the idea that we have to do a podcast. And that's what I wanted to tell you. We should do a podcast. Okay, bye.
I hit record.
I hit record too.
All right, this is it. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Ned, and this is Meg, and our podcast is called Feature Creep, colon, what's it?
Built-in microwave, semicolon, and then what are we going to call this? We don't remember what we're calling this one. We're calling it's microtonal music, of course. The yes. Brilliance of Angine de Poitrine.
Yes, correct.
Or something like that.
Or something like that. Yes.
Some variation on that theme.
Yeah. I mean, we're very strict and we always stick to our topics, so you can count on that. In fact, you can just skip to the very end and then listen to the last few words we say, and then you'll know that we'd stuck to the topic the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just go straight to the conclusion.
Exactly. Because this is basically a standard audio essay format.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, speaking
thoroughly of... Thoroughly researched.
Yeah. Speaking of which, let's get credit where credit is due or blame where blame is due.
Right.
If you want to contact us or complain about this podcast, you can contact Dana, D-A-N-A, at fcbm.io. She is the co-founder and CEO of this podcast.
Yeah. And it's all her fault.
It is or whatever. Yeah. Anything wrong that you disagree with, you should directly send emails to Dana about it.
Right. Yeah. Just unload.
Yes. Yeah.
So yeah, I kind of like, this is kind of a roundabout topic because the last podcast we did was about micro genres in music. And we were talking all about like the 80s and early 90s.
Yes.
And then... then yesterday, well, the day before yesterday, you were falling asleep and you saw like a KEXP, which is a radio station out of Seattle, right?
Yes.
Seattle?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And KEXP has like this studio space where they have people come and perform. It's kind of like, but not exactly like the tiny desk concerts that NPR does.
Right.
And so they have this room and people come with their bands and they perform. But this band is that we're going to talk about is from Quebec, and they did not record in the KEXP studios. They recorded somewhere in Quebec and then sent the video digital recording, whatever, to KEXP. And so you saw them because of KEXP, even though they weren't specifically in the KEXP studio. And this band, Angine de Poitrine, is a band that plays microtonal music, and I thought, oh well, this is you sent it to me when I was asleep, and so I woke yes, up to I woke up and I was alone in the house when I woke up, and so there was nobody directing my activities except for myself, and so I got out of bed and I was like, I'm gonna exercise first thing and then make myself some breakfast, and then I looked at my phone and I saw that you had sent me this KEXP performance, and so I opened it and was watching it right away, and I was like so discombobulated and bowled over that I just got, my whole morning got completely derailed in a good way. And from about 8 or 8:30 in the morning, I think it was about 8 in the morning, until like 2 in the afternoon, I did nothing but scour the internet for more videos, performances, recordings, information, and merch about this band. Like, when are you coming to America? Oh my God, they're so great. And so their music to me is like completely defies definition. And I tried to figure out like what their deal is. Like, how do you succinctly describe what it is you're experiencing when you listen to them? And they did the dirty work for me, and they refer to themselves, let me see if I can find it here. They refer to themselves as a microtonal, where is it? A microtonal Dada Pythago Cubist Rock Orchestra. So, Pythago being short for like Pythagorean theorem.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're like, I've also heard them or read about them being described alternately as math music, mm-hmm. which is like really complicated rhythms, like polyrhythm music where the time signature changes within the song itself or the piece itself. And so
yeah.
there's multiple time signatures within the same piece. There's like, and then they're microtonal, which is like a really interesting thing. So like, I looked at microtonality on, you know, Wikipedia, because at this yep. point in our lives, if it's not on Wikipedia, I refuse to believe it. And I've said this before, but I mean it now more than ever, because it's like the last bastion of collectively agreed upon knowledge.
Yes. Yeah.
And so like, that's what I'm clinging to.
Right.
So
I do want to caveat that it's not some blind belief. The problem, the right. thing that Wikipedia provides is access to source. Like, it you need yeah. to verify it for sure, but at least it's there, right? And
right.
and all the things that people say about it being true, where it's like one person makes a website and then cites it on Wikipedia, absolutely true. That's on you to fucking figure that shit out. Like, it's not a great right. situation, but it's the last one.
It's yeah, it's this is what this is what it's come to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is all, like, we could have a whole other podcast episode about discernment and how to tell whether something is fucking true or not.
Right.
We should probably do that at some point.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, in music, there's, like, the distance between musical notes, for example, on a piano, which is sort of like the flagship instrument of Western
yes.
Music. Like, on a piano keyboard, the distance between the keys sonically between mm-hmm. the vibration of the frequency of the vibration that represents the notes on a piano is an interval, and the intervals on pianos are called whole steps or half steps, and that's a mathematical representation of the distance between the vibrations of the notes. Whole steps, half steps. Right. We have octaves, so there are eight steps, and then in between them there are some half steps. And the pattern on a piano keyboard is whole, whole, half, whole, 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 half. And so, then you get to the octave, which is another
yeah,
whole.
So Even not thinking about that so much as just if you think about two notes an octave apart, then we divide those by 12 semitones in Western music.
Yeah, that's a much more succinct way of saying what
so
I was trying
to say. There's 12 yeah. discrete steps between the lower octave and the higher octave. So if you're looking at like,
yes.
you know, the C note or what, or A440 is the frequency. So A880 yeah. is the higher octave, right? And so there's 12 discrete semitones between that is made up of that whole,
yes.
whole half. That's pattern. A standard scale, right? That's more about the half, whether you're in sharps and flats and all of those things. But I feel like that's over explaining what you're trying to say, which is just
totally important, because yeah. like it's like musical theory is really weird and there's tons of math in it, which I don't, you know, probably most people who just listen to music don't realize there's a shitload of crazy right. math happening. So it's important. So yeah, so the intervals on the piano are whole or half steps. In some other types of music, like in Indian music or Persian music or Turkish music, I think there are even smaller intervals. Like, so if an octave in Western music is divided into 12 parts, then in other like cultures music, like Byzantine chant, Arabic music, theory apparently from the 10th century onward, according to Wikipedia, Persian music, Turkish music, other Near Eastern musical traditions don't have the like rigid mathematical sort of parts that we have with the 12 components to an octave, and they have like steps that are in between the 12 steps of the scale in Western music. And those are like, there's a word for it. I'm trying to find it's not microtone, because microtones are even smaller than the quarter. I think they're quarter steps, basically. It's halfway between a half step.
Right.
And so there, it's still somewhat measurable in terms of math intervals, but it's not as like rigid as the 12 intervals that we adhere to in Western music. And the microtonal music is even tinier microtone pitches that are smaller than a quarter step, but like still not the step that you start from. So mm-hmm. if you're going up and down a scale and you're hitting every single interval, it's called a chromatic scale. And in the 12 notes of the chromatic scale in Western music, are still really rigid and evenly spaced. And then microtones are like smaller than the steps in between. So it's like you're kind of, microtones are kind of like the spaces in between the keys on a piano.
Right.
And so microtonal music is really interesting because it can sound kind of like dissonant. Like you can hear the sound waves hitting each other mm-hmm. when two keys are played at the same time or two pitches are played at the same time, because they are not mathematically, complementary to each other in terms of the size of the wave of sound that hits your eardrum. And so it wobbles a little bit and it doesn't sound as like complementary as the 12 whole and half steps do in Western music. And so anyway, the music is really odd sounding at first. So when you sent it to me, I was listening to it, and this band has a lot of really fucking interesting rhythms going on. Mm-hmm. And then there's only two people in the band, Angine de Poitrine. And Angine de Poitrine refers in French to the pain, the chest pain you experience right before a heart attack.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is like what the rough translation is, I would say, the explicative translation of that phrase, Angine de Poitrine. And so they have like really pounding bass lines and drums, and then also guitar. And there are only two people in this band, which is like blowing my fucking mind. And the guitarist plays a microtonal guitar and a microtonal bass guitar, and they are combined on the same instrument. So one person is playing both of them. And I was really interested about these microtonal guitars. Put a pin in that. We'll come back to that in a second, because there's people who make them and you can buy them. And I'm like, oh my God, I need one. Even though I don't need one, but I really feel like I need one now.
Yeah.
So the person who plays guitar in the band uses electronic loops in order to record a bunch of different bass and guitar parts on these multi-tonal, microtonal instruments, and then loops them and then plays over them. So they keep building upon the sound over and over again, which is something that happens a lot in electronic music, but it's not that common in rock and roll music, because usually you have like a whole band full of different people all playing just one instrument in a traditional like rock band, right?
Yep.
So it's just these two people. The drummer does not use loops. The drummer just drums. Mm-hmm. And so, but uses all kinds of different rhythms that change throughout the song. And they write in really bizarre time signatures sometimes. Like there's for sure some 7/8. I thought I heard some 5.
Yeah. It's...
And like Western rock music is usually 4/4, meaning there's 4 beats in a measure of music and a quarter note gets one of those beats. So there's equal notes divided up within each measure, and the notes that get equal amounts of time devoted to them add up to the total amount in that measure. And that means it's a quarter note for a 4 beat
measure. No.
Measure.
What? Yeah. Well, so that the polyrhythm thing is always something I've been curious about, but it can get complicated really quickly. But I don't, I haven't listened to as much of the music as you have at this point. I think you lapped me pretty quickly.
I did.
Yeah. Cause you were like, I had to go to work and, well, Sunday I had to go do more important things like sit on a boat in the water.
Right.
I don't know, more important.
And ice cream. And ice cream.
Yes. Yeah. We sailed to the gas station and got ice cream.
That's so great.
Yeah. I kind of want to just leave that hanging and be like, how does that work? There's a fuel dock and it's essentially a gas station for boats, and it's a gas station. They have like a little a convenience store. So we got ice cream. So
that's so cool.
Yeah, the polyrhythms in theory is like two or more rhythms that are not readily derived from each other. Like triplets can be considered a kind of polyrhythm, right?
Yes.
Like a more common polyrhythm you would hear in especially classical music or traditional sort of Western style music.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, when there's their music is dense. It's
yes.
I would say dense is
a really good description of
it. I would definitely encourage listeners to have a listen. I've definitely had people recommend math rock or like heavy polyrhythm music that is hard to listen to. I don't find their music to be hard to listen to. It's still pleasing. Like it's
no, I don't either. I find it incredibly danceable, actually, even though there's like a lot of weird stuff going on.
Yeah, like I think they lean on that polyrhythm idea that like there's still a rhythm that is able to be followed and like like dance to, or you know, depended on a little bit. So
yes, and I found something here that I should mention before I forget. So in the wiki article, they talk specifically about Indian music using microtones, and they're like originally people described them as quarter tones.
Uh-huh.
But they're not. They're called shrutis. And they are an interval that is smaller than a semitone, which is half of a half step.
Mm-hmm.
But it's even smaller than that. And it's like, it's an interval that's the smallest amount of difference between the bass note that a human ear can even detect. So it's like just the tiniest little like up or down from any particular note is a microtone. Mm-hmm. And Indian music uses those teeny, teeny, tiny little tone differences in tone in their form of music, which I find really interesting. Because I always thought it was like a quarter tone and it's not. So just something weird that like was corrected for me after many, many, many years of studying music theory that I was like totally, because a bunch of Westerners taught me this music theory, so they don't even know what they were talking about.
Right.
So yeah, I just thought that was super interesting. There's also French and German composers talk about micro intervals a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And like they seem to be more aware or more willing to use them than like other Western music, like American music, especially American rock music. But you totally ruined me on like the 12 interval scale. Now I listen to it and I'm like, oh, there's so much missing from this. And it's all because of that music you sent me day before yesterday that I didn't get until yesterday. So yeah, this band like visually is amazing too, because they have sort of contrasting outfits. You cannot see who they are at all.
Right.
Like who they are under their costume is impossible to see or tell. When they speak, they have effects on their voices so that you can't tell what their voices actually sound like. And they don't sing. They're instrumental only, but occasionally in between songs, they will say things. Mm-hmm. And involve the audience. And at that point, you can't tell what their voices sound like either. The drummer is dressed in a white outfit with black polka dots. and plays in front of a backdrop that is white with black polka dots. And then their skin is painted black with white polka dots on it. And they have a big black, like, domed paper mache head with a dangly nose that comes off of it.
It's so great.
And the nose is, like, swinging around the whole time they're drumming. And then the other person who plays the two guitars and uses the loops is dressed in black with white polka dots, and their skin is painted white with black polka dots, and they play in front of a black backdrop with white polka dots on it. So they're completely, like, complementary and opposite from each other in terms of the visuals. And then that person has a big paper mache head that is really angular and is kind of like the shape of an inverted pyramid on top of their head. And then they have, like, a big long nose also, but it doesn't wiggle around. And their characters remind me a lot of, like, the Punch and Judy puppets.
Oh,
you know,
yes.
What I'm talking about?
Yeah.
The ones that, like, beat each other up and, like, are French. They're, like, French puppetry, and they're like hand puppets, and they're in a puppet box. What's that called? Is it called a puppet box? What is it called? Why can't I think of the name for that?
There's like fighting nuns, and they're like two little boop boop, like little punching things.
Oh yeah. Okay, apparently Punch and Judy are English. I didn't realize that. I thought they were French. But yeah, they're like they're from like the 1600s.
Yeah.
And it's these two puppets that, like, beat each other up, intentionally violent, like very violent.
Yes, but not the band, just the vibes of it, right?
Like the
paper mache, the overly large paper mache heads, and the ridiculously long noses, and the polka dots. It's really a sight. It's really fun to see and listen to.
So just such a spectacle.
Yeah.
Like I took the file that you sent me and I opened it up on YouTube on my big screen in the living room and was like sitting 2 or 3 feet away from the television because I was just going to sit on the floor and listen to the music. Because a lot of the performances are not like a visual spectacle when it's on KEXP. It's just the band doing their thing in a kind of like a plain sort of space. And it looks sort of like infinite. It's a black background in a black studio with just some string lights. And so it's very unassuming. And this was in a well-lit room. The one with Angine de Poitrine was in a well-lit room. And they had their polka-dotted backdrops and they were in full costume.
Yeah.
And I was like, what in the world is this? So just from the visuals, before they even started playing music, I was like, this is batshit. Like, I was thinking, this is going to be hilarious, right? I thought it would be some kind of, like, weird joke band or something. And they were going to sing, and it was going to be very silly and absurdist. And then the drummer starts, and then the guitar starts. And then I realized that, oh, you're looping. And then I was just, like, sucked in, like, my eyelids peeled back off of my eyeballs as I was watching the television that I didn't expect to even pay attention to with the music going, and I just got like riveted for the next whatever 36 minutes or however long their performance on KEXP was. And as soon as it was over, I hit repeat and watched it again, and then while I was watching it on repeat, I was really paying attention the second time, and then I started Googling things about this band, which is where I went down the internet rabbit hole about like microtonality in music and like polyrhythms and this band and where I can buy their stuff and whether they're coming to America on a tour in 2026, which evidently they are, but I don't know anything about the details yet. So wherever they show up, I'm going. And I can't, like, I cannot wait to see these people live. So they've performed a bunch of shows, and there are a bunch of videos on the internet and on YouTube of like their live performances that people just recorded.
Yeah.
And they are like the person playing the stringed instruments has the tightest loops I've ever heard anyone put into music ever. And the guitarist and the drummer are so tight together, and the drummer is such an excellent drummer. It's every time I listen to it, I'm getting my mind blown over and over and over again. Like, I just can't even... I don't know very much about these two people. They're somewhat secretive. Like,
well,
I have
yeah,
no
it's
idea.
An anonymous band, right? Like, they're they are attempting. You know, it's very Daft Punk vibes, right? Like, you know, wear masks, don't let people know about your personal life, kind of situation.
Yeah, and I'm like, I wonder if these people grew up together. And they've never not been playing music together, sort of thing. Like, I would not be surprised at all if these people have been playing music together basically forever, because they're just sort of one mind when they're doing it. And it's so compelling. Really fucking cool. And like, the names of their songs are kind of nonsensical. Like, it's not clear why they're named what they're named. Anyway, I totally wanted to talk about them because now I'm a devotee of this band that came out of nowhere from Canada.
Just crazy. Just boom. Check it out.
So yeah, like, another thing about microtonal music that I learned about, and this is something that I have some direct experience with. Like, the Shruti music from India has like 22 intervals in an octave, I think. And there's other, like, Burmese and African music that have like microtones and stuff. But I learned that gamelan music, which is Indonesian, is also microtonal. And I guess I knew this, but I didn't have the phrasing microtonal music at the time that I was exposed to playing gamelan. And the college that I graduated from, St. Kate's in St. Paul, they were gifted a gamelan instrument. And the instrument itself is actually, like, I'm going to fuck this up because I'm going to describe it in ways that are not the way that people who are proficient in it would probably explain it. But gamelan is an assortment of, it's an ensemble of individual percussive instruments, but it's all played, even though there's like 30 odd people who play, I think, at the same time, it's played as if it's one instrument. So the fact that there are different components of percussion it's not considered a separate, they're not considered separate things the way that we think of like drums and guitar and bass and whatever. I really
so
like
you have
kind
a
of,
set almost like this yeah. is the instrument and it's a collection of all these different like stations that people work, play at or whatever.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And they're like most of the percussive instruments, if not all, are made of metal. So they're like hand drums and something called an idiophone and something called a gongsa and metallophones, xylophones. Apparently sometimes there's bamboo flutes and stringed instruments called a rabab, which when I learned briefly how to interact with these components, there were no strings. So what I remember are these sort of like gold pots that look kind of like urns and you bang on them.
Okay.
And then there's like some gongs and some of the, in the one that I played, there were xylophones.
Looking at the Wikipedia there's a photo of a person, playing like upside down bowls. So kind of like bells, they look like brass bells or bronze bells. And then I can see in the background there are other like metallic plates that are kind of like a xylophone. They're not, or vibraphone. Xylophone, I think, is a metal one. But it doesn't matter. That it's not that. It's just that there are some metal plates that are also struck. It's really interesting. And then there's like big drums and interesting.
And the gamelan is super cool to play too because you don't ever read the music. There's no like printed music that you read in order to know which part to play on what component of the percussion.
Yeah.
You you're taught, when you learn it, you're taught these phrases, and the spoken phrases refer to the rhythms and the patterns of notes that you strike on the percussive instruments in the section that you're sitting in. And I remember, like, one of the patterns we learned were the words tuk nong tuk gong. And so the tuks are one component of the instrument set in front of you, and then the nong and the gong are two separate. So there's actually like three tones being played, and the rhythm that you speak is the rhythm that you play them, and the sort of like pattern that fits into the rest of the patterns that people are playing. So like in a Western orchestra, you know, there's like violins, violas, cellos, wind instruments, bass instruments, like all this stuff. And they all have different parts to play. And the gamelan is similar, although it's conceptualized differently and there's no printed music. And it's super cool. And I guess I wonder now if I could go listen to a gamelan performance, if I would be able to pick out like some of the things about the microtones that I didn't, my ear wasn't hearing, because I wasn't able to at the time understand a concept of microtones, because that's not how anyone explained it to me. And so I didn't have that context.
Right.
But if you're ever in a place where you can go see a gamelan performance, you should go see it. Sometimes like at weddings and things, when they play gamelan, they play for hours and hours and hours and hours straight. And what they play is just like, you have to memorize the words that correspond to the patterns that you're playing. And so it's like these huge, long, sweeping, like, stories of memorization.
Oh,
and then you play for hours and hours. It's so cool. It's such an interesting way to like approach playing music and music performance.
I love the like tie to the kind of like oral history tradition, right?
Yes, that's exactly what it is. It's like an oral tradition. They're like telling a recorded story that's passed down through words that corresponds to the instruments. It's super cool.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, man, for how much of the world, this is just something about like American exceptionalism, right? Like America just doesn't give a shit about what other people are doing.
Right.
And it's amazing to me that so many other cultures implement microtonality in their music, but it like never comes up in conversation anywhere. Like, I'm just kind of blown away by this.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, me too.
Like, how has it taken me this long to learn about this?
Right.
In such explicit terms. So then when I was down the rabbit hole,
yes,
I also found references to other, like Reddit is full of people talking about microtones in music and polyrhythms and like all kinds of weird math music. And I'm totally into math music now. And on Reddit learned about some of the sort of musical precursors to this band Angine de Poitrine, and I looked some of them up, and one of them is named Trans Am. It's an American band from the 1990s. And when I listened to their music, I was like, oh my gosh, like I can totally hear the through line from like this music that this American band did in the 1990s all the way through to this like Canadian Quebecois band that you shared with me, Angine de Poitrine, and how like how similar their music is, but how much more like developed and further down the path the French Canadian music is.
Yeah.
So I thought that was super interesting. And then I kind of like rabbit holed on math music for a while and stuff like that. It bounced between like Reddit and YouTube, like looking up these bands and then saving them to my like various playlists in my YouTube account. Anyway, yeah, so I just I can't recommend this band Angine de Poitrine enough. They're so fucking good.
They're really, really fun to see the see their performance recorded. Like, it's, I would love to go to a live performance by them.
We will. We're gonna figure out where they are, and hell or high water is not gonna prevent us from seeing these people.
I'm reminded of who did we go see right before COVID? It was like COVID broke, and we were like debating whether we should go to this show.
Yes,
it was, you know, and then in hindsight, Dan Deacon. We were like, yeah, Dan Deacon. And it was like, in hindsight, we're like, of course we should. This was not, you know, that wasn't the problem. Like, yeah, but.
Right. Yeah. Like, Dan Deacon is an electronic artist, and he also does things with loops and like all sorts of interesting rhythms and harmonies and melodies in his music.
Very fun show, very engaging with the audience. And it's like the audience participation isn't that kind of like, oh God, am I going to have to like participate? No, you don't. You can just go observe. It's fine. Like, but I just thought it was a good show for sure. Like he's,
yeah, it was great. I remember this too, because we bought the tickets way ahead of time when we found out he was coming to San Diego, or maybe it wasn't like years ahead of time or anything.
No, but it was like several months or something. Yeah.
Yeah, it was before the issue of COVID. And
was like, even, yeah, there wasn't even in the wind. It was just like, nope, we're going to this concert. Everything's normal. Well, everything sucks. Yep. So we're going to go to this concert.
Yeah, everything sucks. We're going to go to this concert. And then like the night we were there, they announced publicly, like authorities announced, like as of tomorrow, you can't gather in groups of more than 10 people. You can't get together outside of someone's house. Right. Nobody can go anywhere. And I was like, we were staying in Yuma, Arizona at the time. And we were like, are we even going to be allowed to drive back to Arizona where our shit and our cat is? Right. Like, what's going to happen? And I'm pretty confident that I fucking caught COVID at that concert.
Really?
Yeah. Because the next fucking day, we woke up and I felt like I had been hit by a truck, and not like I didn't do anything at that concert, but like kind of bounce around and listen to music. Like we weren't drinking or anything like that. You know what I'm saying? Like there was no reason for me to feel that shitty the next day. We didn't stay up that late, and I didn't like destroy my body dancing in a mosh pit or something. And I had a fever, and for like 2 or 3 days after that, I didn't feel right.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay. I have a feeling. And then they shut everything down. And like that, I think that was the same day that I got my letter of acceptance into grad school. And then like all hell broke loose. And I was like, I don't even know if I'm going to be able to go now.
Right.
Because that was March. The show was March 10th. And the city shut down March 11th.
Yeah.
America shut down on March 11th. And then they were like, 2 weeks, boss. It's just going to be 2 weeks, boss. And then like years, because nobody could behave themselves.
Right. And well, I remember, not to mention too, like, the whoever was leading the government at that point was just like, nah, we're going to not actually get on top of this at all. We're going to just undermine every fucking attempt to make this better. Anyway. Sorry. Yeah.
I remember too, like some friends of ours who own a charter flight company in California, north of you, said that they're pretty sure that they got COVID from folks who came from overseas and chartered planes with them in like November.
God.
They were like, yeah, we got like a mysterious illness in November of 2019.
Yeah.
And nobody could tell us what was wrong with us. And we were all deathly sick for a while. And then we got over it. And then like, I don't know, it was like a month and a half after they got sick in November is when the shit hit the fan, sort of, and people became aware that something wasn't quite right in America. And then by March 10th, they were like, everything's shutting down. And by March 11th, you weren't allowed to go anywhere.
Yep.
Crazy. But we saw Dan Deacon, and I remember at his show, he was like drinking something like pop or something from a bottle, like a Coke bottle.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh my gosh, you guys, what if this is like the end of everything? Like what, someday in the future, after this is all over, we're going to be looking at each other and we're going to find a glass bottle and we're going to be like, do you guys remember when we could just like make this stuff?
Yes. Yeah.
Like stuck in my craw.
Yes.
Like, this like Dan Deacon post-apocalyptic vision of the future where he's like, we used to be able to make glass and things, and now we just have whatever's left over. And that was funny too, because his whole tour for the record that he was promoting on that tour was about like what happens to you after you die. So it was like totally on theme. Everybody at that concert looked around at everybody else when he was talking about what was about to happen, about how this was like all of our last night of freedom before God knows what. And everybody in that room looked at everybody else and thought, are we all about to die together?
Like, right.
And I thought for a second, am I going to regret dying because I went and saw Dan Deacon with other people? And then I was like, no, I think this would be just as good a reason to die as anything.
Yeah.
He's pretty great.
Yeah, he was really great. Yeah, he is
And
great.
It turned out it was totally worth it.
Yeah, yeah.
And we didn't die.
Right?
God, how fucking crazy. And I just want to point out that I have now survived the same flu, H1N1, that killed everybody in the 1918 pandemic, and I survived COVID that killed everybody in the 2019 and 2020 pandemic.
Good job.
And I survived them 10 years apart.
Yeah, good job.
I'm averaging a plague every 10 years.
God.
It's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Maybe we should write some microtonal music in advance of the next pandemic.
So I think that we should form a microtonal synth band and a duo. And I think that's going to happen. And so we should just detail all of the expectations people should have about that at this point.
Great.
Yeah.
That's a short list. You should have zero expectations. Just kidding. You should... I want you to have sky-high, completely unachievable expectations for this synth band.
Actually, I think what's on the menu is you can have several options. Disappointment, for sure, is available if you want to have it. You just dial your expectations up to 11, and you can have a heavy dose of disappointment, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, heavy dose. Considering that it's a microtonal synth band, I can safely say in advance, I think that there's going to be something for everyone.
There's going to be something for everyone. Yes. Yeah.
So, oh my God. Did you send to me, or was it me who sent to you, or maybe you had already seen it irrespective of us sending stuff back and forth, but have you seen the video that... the Orchid synth company did with Matt Berry?
Yes.
And he's like fucking around with the synth, and it's Jemaine Clement is doing like the narrative voiceover.
It's so good.
Oh my God. If you guys haven't seen this, Google it, like get on YouTube and do like Matt Berry Orchid, and it'll come up. And it's this sort of like promotional video that they did with Matt Berry playing the synthesizer.
Yeah.
And the Orchid seems fucking great. I want an Orchid so bad.
Yeah. No, it's great. It's the amount of disappointment. I love... This is the kind of advertising I feel like I would want to do if I had a product that I was going to advertise. Is just...
Oh, yeah, long form.
Just, well, more importantly, just like nonsense. It's like, you know what the product is. Go look at the spec sheet. I'm sure, like, what the fuck is a commercial for? I don't know. Let's do some nonsense. Let's have, like, the narrator be annoyed with the person who's performing because they won't do any of the shit that's supposed to be in the script. Like, that kind of shit, right? Like, who fucking cares? Like, it's, you know, yeah.
Yeah, so I got all inspired because looping music is something that I think is, like, really cool. Like, I'm really interested in both the process and the like concept and how it sounds. And I have God, why am I blanking on the name of it? It'll come to me. Hang on. Oh, organelle. Damon got it for me
when
we were first together. I have had an organelle that he gave me for my birthday. It's the best birthday present I've ever received. And because it involves a fair amount of programming, which is not something I've ever learned how to do, I cannot figure out how to like really use it to its best potential. And a bunch of shit happened in between me getting it and now like having brain infections and stuff that made it really hard to learn new things. And so now I'm in a position where I kind of sort of have the time. And so I'm like, maybe now's the time I should just learn how to play the organelle, and then we can start writing synth music together and recording it and layering it and doing all the things in a MIDI or whatever. And then we'll have this great music. And I was looking up organelle stuff on the internet, and they're already two versions in from mine now. So like they've improved upon it, made it easier to use. So I'm going to have to do it like the kind of the longhand hard way, I think. But I'm super excited about it. And I thought, oh my gosh, now I even wrote in my Hobo Nietzsche, now I have no excuse for not knowing how to use my organelle. When I saw Angine de Poitrine, because I was like, that's way I don't even have to learn how to play a guitar. I can just use my synth and make all kinds of cool sounds.
Yeah, it's like you cheating. Can. And when you when we get together, we can because I have a few synths, and I also have
a few.
Yeah, I also have a reel-to-reel recorder and a MIDIizer that interfaces with it, so that what you can do is you can record. So it's an 8-track recorder, and you can record. You can record like a one track is the MIDI sync track, and so that signal gets played into your MIDI instrument, so it keeps the sync signal, and so then when you want to generate all these loops and things, you have a sync signal. So you can, what you can do then is you can rewind the recording and then layer down more audio that's all in sync with the time. So
fuck yeah.
Yeah.
It'd that's be really what fun we to play need.
With. That is, yes, that's what we need.
100%. Very cool. So yeah. Oh, and speaking of not having to learn any instruments in order to do this, just having to learn how to use the synth. Yeah. I was like, gosh, I've never been able to figure out how guitars work because they have weird intervals in between the strings.
Right.
And, like I've learned, I can play 4-stringed instruments like cello, bass, viola, violin, ukulele, mandolin, whatever. No problem. Yeah. Right. Easy. Right. They're all basically some version of the same thing. Once you figure it out, you're great. And I learned how to play music really well on 4-stringed instruments, but all of them are fretless, and the frets on a guitar drive me fucking crazy.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, a part of the reason I've never learned how to play guitar is the weird intervals. They're not the same distance between the strings the whole way up because there's 6 of them instead of 4.
Right.
Part of the reason I haven't learned how to play guitar is the frets drive me crazy, and I'm like, I need a fretless guitar. That's what I fucking need.
That's what you
and,
need.
And then I was looking at these guitars that, or this multi-instrument that the guitar player from, the string player from Angine de Poitrine is playing, and there I noticed like how many frets there are on this guitar, and I'm like, okay, so then I started Googling microtonal guitars, right?
Yes, right.
And there are companies that make them. There's like a Turkish company that makes these gorgeous fucking guitars that you can buy, and the frets are removable, so you can put in as many or as few as you want.
Oh, interesting. So you can kind of
like,
set it up.
Oh, God, that's really enticing. Like, I really, really, really want one, but they're like crazy expensive. They're way more expensive than synthesizers are. And I was like, okay, baby steps, baby steps. Like,
yeah.
This is going to turn into, at first I thought about how I could turn into you and have a bunch of synthesizers in my house at the same time and
do it.
Still not, I mean, you know how to play yours. I don't know how to play mine yet. So there's no reason for me to get more than one. And then I started
Wrong.
Thinking about
incorrect.
My
incorrect, incorrect.
Which
anyway,
part?
Continue. Heart all of that. It's,
all
there's
of that
absolutely always the reason to get more synthesizers. It's never a wrong decision to
right.
buy one. Invest the now.
Next, yeah, invest now. The orchids are only going to get more expensive as we go.
Yeah.
So then I was thinking about like how I have a book collection. And at one point in time, I was like, I own so many books and I've run out of space for all of them on bookshelves that yeah. I should have a new rule. And the rule is I can't buy any new books until I've read every single book I already own. And then like later that day, I broke that rule and
yeah,
bought another
exactly,
book.
Exactly. Exactly.
So yeah. I'm like, well, books take up way less room than synthesizers do. And I don't have any room for synthesizers unless I rearrange my life. And then I started thinking about rearranging my life in order to buy
That's
more
correct.
Synthesizers.
That's correct. Yes. Do that.
God. Oh man.
My for sure. I have a whole closet full of keyboards and synthesizers and shit. And yeah, when you guys come out, we'll get them set up and play with them.
Fantastic.
Fun. Yeah.
Yeah. We have We've got to do it.
When the kids came to visit, I bought them pocket synthesizers to play with on the plane when they
Yes, left. That's right. I remember.
Yeah. And then one of them was like, oh yeah, no. He's already decided we're forming a band.
How can you not?
How can you not? Exactly. People need to hear this shit. People need to hear my robot farts. Mine are the most unique.
That's right. I also think that we need to. So I'm going to cross over. This is like how this is the type of art project I love, right?
Yes.
So yeah. I need to get the synths and then I need to hook them up and record. And I need to, so in one direction I need to be recording, in the other direction I need to hook the synths up to mushrooms, because if you grow fungus yeah. and then you connect them with the right equipment, you can record the music that mushrooms make. And mushrooms send out electrical impulses in patterns. And depending on what type of mushroom it is, you get very different results. And right. So you just like hook the mushrooms and their mycelium up to your like synthesizer, and they produce all of these cool tones, and then you can record it. And but this, of course, requires me to start growing mushrooms, which is something else I've been meaning to do. And so I have to set up my mycology set up in my basement, and then I have to get the synthesizer set up and ready to go, and then I have to be able to record it, and then we'll be able to make mushroom music, and we can accompany our mushrooms.
It sounds amazing. I'm in.
Right? Doesn't this sound like a great thing to do?
Yes. Micro voltage sensors or whatever, like they do with biofeedback systems?
Yes. Yeah.
Got you.
That's right.
Yeah.
And if people who are listening to this are interested, you can also Google like mushroom music or like mushroom synthesizer on YouTube. Search for it on YouTube. And there's like there's a person on YouTube who has a whole channel where like all they do is post songs that they've recorded with mushrooms.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
It is cool. It's really, really interesting. I love that there's a way to like translate what mushrooms are doing into something audible.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. That's
super cool.
Yeah. I mean, it makes me wonder what else we could do like that. Like, is there other...
Right? So many things. So many things.
So many like, things.
I wonder if we could hook them up to like my fig tree. What does my fig tree have to say?
Right?
I bet she has lots of things to say.
Yeah. Yeah. The interconnectedness of all things, indeed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is something that I've noticed over time, which is that like all these other things, these organisms that we share space and time with are like totally doing their own thing. And the fact that we think they're doing nothing is largely because we don't know how to talk to them or hear what they're saying. And yeah. if you can just find the right translator, all of a sudden you're like, oh, there's a lot going on. Like, we think we have a grasp on most of what's happening. We do not.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we really don't. I think that's the thing that's like really, you know, I went to school, studied science, as did you. And
yeah.
I remember that young version of me who was like, yeah, like this is it. Like we're trying to understand the world. That's the great effort here. You know, we can all be part of it. We're all like, you know, it's okay that we don't know everything. Like we're finding out, you know?
Yeah.
And the older I got, the more I realized that like we live in a world where mostly there's a huge drive to act like you know everything, represent like you know everything, represent what you are talking about as the definitive truth of the matter. And I was just so disappointed that it was like, that's what won economically.
Yeah.
People are like, oh, well, but that guy knows what he's talking about. So let's give him our money.
Right.
And in reality, yeah. it's just, you know, that guy doesn't know shit.
Yeah. Like,
and the guy over there who's like, I don't know shit, but I have this little bit of evidence and I think maybe this might be what's going on.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think what is so such a turnoff to me about trying to accept money for asserting that something is the case.
Yes.
Is that I'm like, most of the time I'm like, there is no right. Like right is just a combination of variables leading to a particular conclusion in a particular place at a particular time. And if right. any of those variables change, you're no longer right. And so I'm leery of anyone who's like, pay me because I'm right about this. And I can't be one of those people myself.
Right, like, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There's no such thing as right. Right is contingent.
Yeah, it's very... I think the one feedback I've gotten over the years when I, you know, when I get performance reviews or whatever, occasionally, not very often, mostly because of just the nature of the work I've done or the way I've worked.
Yeah. But,
when I have had performance reviews, the one thing that people have said is like, you need to be more assertive. And I'm like, I'm a fucking science writer. Like, that's what I grew up with. I'm not going to fucking assert something that's not true, that I can't prove is true. I'm going to say things. I'm going to qualify everything. I'm going to say, you know, this is the working theory. This is the, you know, this is the understanding that I have currently. Here's the evidence for that. And when somebody asks me whether the system will behave in a certain way, all I'm going to say is like, that's what we're designing for. But it's not proven yet.
Yeah.
And then they get upset and I'm like, well, you want me to lie to them? And it's like, then it's on me. Right. You fucking take the responsibility. I did the work you asked me to. Yeah. You lie about it. Right. I'm not going to lie about it.
That's what sales department is for.
Exactly. Like, you know, I mean, also fuck those guys. Like, how about we don't lie about any of it? But, you know, I mean, you know, if you work in sales, great. Look, you know your work. Do it or don't. I don't fucking know.
Like, oh, you know, my God.
Like, as a culture and community, it's not looking good. That's all I'm saying. I don't know. Maybe you personally, not you, but whoever's, you know, taking particular offense to this conversation.
Right. Whoever's pissed off that we've said this.
Although I would argue if you're listening to this podcast, man, if that's the thing that pissed you off. I don't know. I don't have any follow-up for that.
Keep listening.
Yeah, keep listening. Write that email to Dana. Write that email. Let us know. Let us know how wrong we are.
You know where you can send that opinion.
Yeah.
So speaking of work, has our diligent development team come up
the
with
the art department?
Yeah. Has our art department provided us with some timely and appropriate colors of the day?
I believe they have.
Fabulous.
So
Let's discuss.
Yes, let's discuss. If you're not familiar with our podcast, and this is your very first one, and you made it all the way to the end here, we're going to reward you with some colors to think about and look up. So unlike some organizations, we believe that at least two colors need to be presented in order to give them context. We also believe that once a year is like, if you're going to do that, that's kind of bullshit. You might as well, you know, why do you claim the whole year? Let's go with once a day, or how about these colors of the day? And here we are.
I can think of several professional organizations who only do a certain thing once a year and call that success.
Yes. Yes. I can too. Damn. yeah. Holy shit.
So we have two colors of the day. These are the perfect colors for today.
Yes.
They are the colors of this day.
Yes.
And I think that the names especially are like profoundly connected to the discussion that we just had.
Yes.
So the first color of the two colors of the day is named Pyroelectric Pilgrim.
Yes,
and correct. I really like that.
Me too.
The color value of this color in terms of the red, green, blue values are 85, 69, and 5, which means that there's a lot of red and a lot of green, but almost no blue in the tone.
Right.
And the color is kind of reminds me of like the second poop that babies have. Like the first poop is that like black tar poop that's called meconium. And then the second poop is like a weird, like browny, strange, mud puddly, greenish mud puddle color.
Yeah.
And this totally reminds me of that.
This is also, I feel like this is a kind of like, this is a color that like a military, military fatigues might be in if they're not camouflage. Like it's not quite olive drab. It's not, but it's close.
Yeah, it's like the next cul-de-sac over.
Yeah, the next cul-de-sac over. Exactly.
Yeah.
So the hexadecimal value, and this is if you're on your phone or you have a phone handy or you're at your computer, you can jump on the Googler and you can put this right in the Googler and it'll show you the exact color. So a hexadecimal value starts with an octothorpe or a pound sign. Or as unfortunately it got co-opted into hashtags. So you're going to go hashtag 554505. Once again, that's hashtag 554505. And you just chuck that in the Googler. It'll pop up some this exact color. So
yeah, it's a great color.
Yep.
Like this to me would be like a perfect like a wall color if you were doing some kind of very complicated damask pattern on the wall.
Oh yeah, yeah,
I think it'd be really good for that. The complementary color to it is called Distal Old Timer. And I love that. I was just having a conversation with my orthodontist about the distal side of one of my molars.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's biology related. It's science. We've covered both pyroelectrics and distal terminology, which we've just come full circle. So Distal Old Timer has RGB values of 170, 186, 250. So it's kind of like it's a very like powdery lilac-y blue color.
Yes, lilac. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much.
But like very washed out.
Right.
Like it's very pastel. And it's definitely like a high contrast to the pyroelectric pilgrim baby poop color.
Yeah.
They'd go great together. They're super great together. I love high contrast stuff like black, like prominent colors of black with all other pastel colors. I think that it's like a nice combination, but I almost like browns and pastels better.
Yes. Yeah.
Like something about the quality, like the chocolatey color with pastels is just great. So yeah, these two together are really, I really like this combination a lot. Like I would totally put this all over my house on the inside.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's really great.
They're great.
This is like, I feel like a pettifor might be in this color.
Yes.
This color combination. Yeah. So.
Yes. That's like a little tiny, like perfectly miniature formed dessert cake.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. The hexadecimal for this one is AABAFA. So alpha, alpha, beta, alpha, foxtrot, alpha.
Right. Yeah, and you stick that in the Googler and you'll see it. So.
Yeah. You can open two windows at the same time and do one in one and one in the other, and then you'll see the contrast right next to each other. It's super great. You should paint everything in these colors today.
Today. Today. Do this now. Yeah.
Right.
Go. Yeah. Print this out on your color printer and run down to Home Depot and get them to color match a paint can of each.
Yes.
Actually, that's
what?
Not a bad way to go, because you can get the sample cans for not that much.
Yeah.
Huh.
You could do all kinds of these.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, there you have it.
Mm-hmm. That was that.
Yeah.
We covered a lot of ground today.
So we've started two artistic endeavors today. We're going to be a microtonal synth band, and then also I think we're going to debut our painting artist. Our artwork. So we'll work in the medium of house paints.
Yes. We're so good at this.
So good. So good. Yeah.
Oh, thank goodness we survived COVID to get here.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, the world is lucky to have us. You guys are doing such good work right now.
Gosh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like when you sent me the Angine de Poitrine yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, I think I responded to your text with something like, you're literally giving me something to live for right now.
It was funny. I knew you would like it. I knew you would like it. I just didn't realize like how much it was going to be important to you right then. Like it just was like, you wouldn't shut up about it. I was like, fucking Meg, I gotta go sail. I got shit to worry about. This shit sucks. Who cares about microtonal? Fuck that shit. Who cares? It's just some dumb nonstop, like, nerd music.
Sorry. Yes, it is nerd music. 6 hours of my, like, yes, omnidirectional, yes, tirade over text. Like, and this is another thing I learned, and here's this other thing. Oh my God. It's like, I just couldn't help myself. I think part of the reason that I was so, like, engrossed because I was home alone and there was nothing, yeah, to take my attention away from it. Yeah. And I just got completely sucked in. And I didn't eat breakfast. I didn't, like, brush my teeth, yes, when I got, yeah, up. I just, like, went straight into the internet and didn't come out for 6.5 hours.
I think it's something I appreciate about our friendship, though, is, and why we continue to do the podcast even now, like, as the years have gone on and we've, like, had, yeah, other stuff get in the way, is that it works both ways. Like, there are days where I'm just, like, pounding your fucking phone with shit, like, no, this thing now, and this thing, and oh my God, wait, this thing, look at this rabbit hole I just went down. So I think it's, you know, it was my turn. I was due.
Yeah, I mean, this is really, like, what it's all about, right? Like, these, yeah, are the things, yeah, this is like, if you don't have shit like this in your life, all you're doing is eating the same plain oatmeal every day.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, spice it up, put a blueberry in there occasionally.
Right?
Yeah.
Take some risks.
Take some risks. Yeah.
Yeah, like, Damon got home from the tool meet that he was at, and,
yeah,
I was, like, blasting the music in the living room, and he went with our financial planner, so our financial planner walked in the door. I was like, listen to this amazing music! I'm roping you in! Yeah. Oh God, it was so good. It was like, at first when I heard it, my brain was so overwhelmed with how much I liked it that I couldn't quite, like, wrap my head around what I was hearing at first.
Uh-huh.
Like, my analytical brain was completely, yeah, shushed by my, like, excited brain from an aesthetic perspective.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until, like, you know, several hours in that I was really thinking about, like, the music theory behind what they were doing and whether I was capable of doing something similar. Oh, man. Aspirational. Very aspirational, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
God. All right. Well, I guess we should call it a day on this one so I can go dig out my organelle and start learning how to play it.
Yeah, you got to get on that. We've got to start. We've got a whole microtonal. I'm already researching how to manage microtonal instrumentation, I guess. I don't know what you call it.
Yeah.
But MIDI doesn't support microtonal directly, but it looks like there's some workarounds. It's okay. MIDI has been, people have been complaining about this shit since the dawn of MIDI, and it's never been updated, and we're still on MIDI 1.0, and no one fucking does anything else, and that's just the fucking way it is. So.
All right. Well, we've got our work cut out for us then.
Yep. It's going to be great.
We don't do anything small.
No. No.
No.
Yeah.
Why would it be easy or straightforward?
No.
We're talking about us here.
What's the point of that?
Yeah. What is the point?
Yeah.
What is the point?
Exactly.
Cool. Okay. All right. Well, okay, thanks, everybody. Thanks. Bye.